Many of you probably know me. My name is Teresa Notari. I'm the Assistant Director for the Natural Family Planning Program of the Bishops Conference. There's not a microphone in the room, so when we are discussing today, I would just say project a little bit louder than what you're used to speaking. We have an exciting topic today that I know many diocesan staff are interested in: marriage ministry. Even parish ministers, laity as well as clergy, are interested in this topic of requiring natural family planning as part of marriage preparation. And I'd like to introduce our three panelists. But before I do, Father Bob, could you lead us in a little prayer to get started?
Just close your eyes and invite the Lord to be with us, to open our hearts to wisdom and understanding, to deepen our convictions and fill us with joy and love in His service. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you. Well, our first speaker today is Father Robert Cannon. Father Bob has been a ghost staff member of the Natural Family Planning Program of the Bishops Conference for easily, 26 years? Probably as long as that I've been working in the office. And it's interesting because Father Bob's got one of these backgrounds that is a variety of skill sets that anybody would be happy to scoop up in ministry. He's got advanced degrees in urban anthropology, in theology, and he's a canon lawyer to boot. And so the annual survey that the Bishops Conference does of the diocesan natural family planning programs, this was his brainchild way back when, in the late 80s, when he was talking with Bishop McHugh, the founder of our office, and consulting on basically how to get a national snapshot of what's going on in the dioceses and how to keep placing that picture in front of the bishops collectively to get them to pay attention to diocesan NFP ministry. When Father Bob joined our staff as a consultant, I can tell you that natural family planning was mostly done in the kitchens of the diocesan coordinators who were volunteers. And we would always have to listen to people on the phone with the babies crying in the background and running to the front door to see who was doing what and that kind of thing. And so we've seen tremendous growth in the years that we've been working together looking at diocesan NFP ministry. Father Bob has also been the one to write different canonical reflections for us, and we have one posted up on the website of basically what he will be speaking about today, and that is, what does canon law have to say about requirements for marriage preparation? So we'll have Father Bob first, and then after Father Bob, we have our two diocesan coordinators, Rochelle, just raise your hand there, Savageau from the Diocese of Fargo, who will talk about, let me also say, and Cindy Leonard from the Diocese of Phoenix, and they will talk about the strategy that they had put in place prior to launching a policy of requiring a full course of natural family planning as part of marriage prep, and also what has gone on in the diocese since launching that. So why don't we begin with Father Bob, and maybe one other thing, Father Bob, because you're good at this, ask everybody where they're coming from, and just maybe a show of hands, and so we can...
Well, I was going to do that in a different kind of way. First of all, I'm going to try not to be boring. All right, just have to tell you that, like with high school students, hope this is going to be boring. I hope this is a little fascinating for you. I will not turn into like little mini canon lawyers and stuff. We can go around waving the book of canon law at any priest or anybody, but... What I would like to do, though, is get a real quick sense of what are you expecting, because I can pretty much roll with my presentation in different ways depending upon your needs. So, what are the takeaways that you hope to get from the presentations during this session? Anyone? Yes.
Information to convince our diocese to do this.
Convince our diocese to do this. All right, to empower you to come. Okay. Yeah.
Most especially to convince the priest.
Convince the priest. Clergy.
Diocese,
I hear clergy issue.
The diocese doesn't need convincing. It's the clergy, deacons as well, that need to say to the couples, we want you, we need you, you have to do this.
Okay, we'll help you with that, and that's part of finding the delicate balance. Yes?
Speaking of clergy and priests, I've heard one talk in regards to canon law and saying, well, we're not supposed to make it too difficult for people to access the sacraments.
We'll certainly address that. Okay? Any other? Yes?
I feel like I should say something.
Join me, brother. Join me.
No, I come from a diocese where we already require the intro session for NFP, but the bishop's looking at requiring a full course of NFP. And so I guess I'm looking for just feedback from anybody who might already require a full course versus the intro session and how effective that is.
Well, you'll certainly get a couple of perspectives on that and some of the things that I'll be saying today, too. So you'll be better armed, prepared to offer some suggestions. Yes?
How can NFP ties into the greater vision of sacramentality?
I will lead you all into that kind of strategic view. That's of how this all fits into play. Okay? You'll see that. I'll be reading some of the canons dealing with marriage and such, just to give you a sense of and then we'll roll right into some of the other things. But, yes?
I'm looking for a much broader approach. I don't want to pursue a mandate that puts all the pressure on the priests to deliver. I'd like all the resources of the church, the medical, Catholic medical, education, parents, clergy, and present the beauty of our teaching rather than a legalistic mandate that we can start earlier. So when couples come for marriage, they have some idea of what we already believe rather than just the men set up our secular culture.
So instead of eat your carrots, say carrots are delicious and wonderful.
More than carrots. The full diet.
Any? What are your expectations? I want you to be engaged right off the bat. That's the reason why I'm asking these questions. So, yes.
I'm interested to hear other people's experience in terms of if it works with the mandatory, how they are providing the training.
Okay, that's a very practical resource question. Okay. Yes.
I sat in on the same presentation 2 years ago. So I'm interested to know the track record and how things have gone in that time.
All right. Any others? Yes?
The practical tools of interest, I'm in a diocese where this is not required, but we're looking at making it a requirement, kind of the practical tools of, do you start a deanery? Do you kind of, how do you pilot this to kind of make it easy to track?
How do you implement it? Okay. Any others? Yes?
I'm also interested in seeing in 5 years, 10 years, how many people have been using it after it's implemented as a requirement.
Okay. Okay. Kind of like a post action.
Not the short term, but
after action kind of thing. Okay. Okay, what's the follow through flow rate
the
kind of
support in the later into the marriage itself of all four children and how we're supporting them as a church, like we support them in the beginning, but our continual support.
Okay. Good. Those are all very good things. I think we'll be able to touch on all of that for all of you, and we'll be around after my session. There'll be some question and answer. Then we'll take a break, and then we'll have the practical aspects of things. The Church of the Concern, I'm just going to start off. You already know a lot of the stuff that I'm going to say to you, but we need to have that larger picture of how what we're doing and why this is a concern and a question that needs to be really understood in a very, very nuanced way, but in a very practical way, given our culture and our times. And the Church has recognized the fact that marriage is under siege. And you can see in the Second Vatican Council, Gaudium et Spes, they talk about divorce being a plague from a... when I look at all the different kinds of research done in cohort failure, as the demographers like to say. There are all different types of trends, like cohabitation and this and that, and, you know, one for one for this, and 50% divorce rate varying in decades, sometimes 46%, 47%. Does anyone know what the divorce rate is for second-time marriages?
Over 60%.
Over
75%. It's in the 70s. So people actually think that you know, you're smarter after your first divorce. I've talked with older canonists, older than myself, and in their experiences, let's say I'm from Florida, so in the 50s and 60s, early 60s in Florida, for the entire state, we may have had a handful of petitions for declaration of nullity. Handful. There was no tribunal staff, so we're, you know, none of that. And then with the uproar and the divorce rates starting to increase in the 60s, everything just kind of mushroomed to the point that people are coming not just seeking, you know, an annulment, but sometimes people are coming with three, four broken marriages, seeking relief from the church so that they can exercise the right to marry in the church. Remember one woman who, I think she was married seven times. So I'm going through all these lack of form cases. Those are very simple, what they're called documentary cases. The person wasn't married in the church, was Catholic, or married a Catholic, had been married before and all this. So I finally had a call on the phone because I thought she was psychologically unfit to enter into marriage, and I was going to put a prohibition, veditum, on her for her to go some massive counseling to find out if she believed in the permanency of marriage. And so I called her on the phone. She started laughing when I called. I went, okay, we have the laughing person on the phone. She says, Father, I know why you're calling. I said, why? She says, I kind of guess. It's all the number of marriages that I've had. And I went, yes. She says, but I really found a great Catholic guy. She had a tragic history. And there are reasons why she entered one marriage after another. So we live in a very, very conflicted time. Some of the discussions that I've had with folks here regarding marriage prep and what we're trying to do with marriage prep is that we're, in our society, we're seeing marriages being very, very insular, more and more and more, and couples being disconnected from the larger church, or not even seeing how their marriage has anything to do with the larger church. And for us who are involved in, quote, trying to help them understand human sexuality, love, lovemaking, covenant of life and love that marriage is supposed to be, they kind of wonder why we're getting in their way, so to speak. So often marriage preparation programs end up being obstacles rather than loving gifts that we're trying to offer couples. One of the frequent things I like to say to many folks is that when people typically come to the church seeking to be married in the church, if they do, and we're seeing decreasing trends in that in our society and other places, they've already made the decision to marry, so anything that we try to offer them, again, it's doing this checklist kind of thing. Avoid the checklist. Always talk in terms of gift that the church wishes to offer you. So we live in a very difficult time. So when it comes to marriage itself, the church has been very, very aggressive in many ways at trying to provide the helps that, you know, for marriage, pre-marriage, premarital type stuff, pre-cana things, evenings for the engaged, just the whole full gambit of anything we can offer, coming up with kind of psychometric things, focus, prepare, trying to see if couples are got their acts together regarding major areas of relationship and things, all of those things, which are, you know, fine. Retreats, gosh, you could go down the whole list, and actually you've been the model for many other churches and religious groups because they're concerned about the rate of divorce and dysfunctionality in marriages, lowering birth rates in marriages, couples deciding not to have any children at all, abuse, sexual abuse, all those different types of things. So there are a lot of people that join us in our concerns for marriage, and legitimately so. One specific question that's come up early on, especially with the improvement in the scientific methods regarding achieving pregnancy or postponing pregnancy in are called natural family planning methods, as the sophistication of these methods have increased in the goodness of these methods in helping people live out the church's teaching on marriage, people have been saying, you know, this really needs to be in what we do as far as marriage prep. And other people are just saying, well, this is such good stuff, and most of them have never heard any of this stuff, even in Catholic high schools. They need it so badly. You have to do it. It's so good for you. Okay. So a lot of, again, desire to somehow offset the burdens that our society is inflicting upon the love of couples. And so in all the things that we do, all of them, and as important as they all are, again, the intent is for us to help couples really live out their marital love and to be the best of lovers. I shared with some of the folks last night that one of the retreats that we just did at Travis Air Force Base, for instance, was for single airmen. And it was entitled Becoming the Best of Lovers. And we filled it up, had a nice retreat, and one of the things that I taught our young airmen of all different faiths was, how do you embody love? How do you embody love? What do your gestures of love and affection mean? Do they mean anything? And then doing the theology of the body. They didn't know where it came from. I talked about the Judeo-Christian heritage that we have in the book of Genesis, but they were just captured in wonder that this is so beautiful, this is so elevating, this is so wonderful, why haven't we heard about